It's Friday, November 21st, 2008, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. Welcome to the podcast. We've made it to another weekend and couldn't come too soon. With the stock market going up and down and all these new appointments by President-elect Obama sure have me concerned, but let's just wait and see. Let's see what happens. It's not 1996 anymore. For today's daily audio stash, of course, it's Friday, so we have our Celebrity Entertainment Report with CelebStoner.com Steve Bloom. Today, Steve and I talk about his interview with the director of the new film, High, The True Tale of American Marijuana, which is out on DVD today. Also, we discuss those Obama appointments I just mentioned. Steve's a little concerned as well. Then, we give you part one of my two-part interview with screenwriter, filmmaker, and activist Mike Gray from Hollywood, California. We last visited with Mike when he was working with the Clergy Speak Out Against the Drug War video. Today I'm speaking with Mike about the drug war as it's erupting south of the border in Mexico and the rampant corruption that has infected the government because of the war on drugs. We'll conclude that two-part interview on Monday. Plus, we got an extra special musical break with one of my favorite groups, Los Lonely Boys, so stay tuned for that. It's the last weekend before the Thanksgiving holiday here in the States. So grab yourself a turkey baster bong. I suppose somebody's probably made one by now. And enjoy your normal daily audio stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Huffington Post blogger on Ramstad as drug czar. I mentioned those Barack Obama appointments, and it's floating around the blogosphere that Jim Ramstad may be Barack Obama's choice for the new drug czar. I've written about it all week. Now a post comes up on the influential Huffington Post blog by Maya Zalovitz, called Obama Drugs Are Pick, No Recovery from War on Drugs. This is Maya's words. Unfortunately, Ramstad may be a drug warrior in recovering persons' clothing. There is one issue that has consistently separated those who put science and saving lives in front of politics. That is needle exchange programs for addicts to prevent the spread of HIV and other bloodborne illnesses. Even President Clinton now says he was wrong when he ignored the recommendations of every scientific and medical organization in the world that has examined the question, from the AMA to the World Health Organization, and refused to lift the federal ban on funding. While Obama has said that he favors federal funding, the last thing we need is another drug czar to talk him out of it. Ramstad looks like that person. I am awaiting comment from his office to see if he has changed his position, but his history on the issue isn't good. In 1992, he said, quote, "Federal funds should be used to get people off drugs, not facilitate drug abuse. Let's support programs that save lives, not destroy lives," end quote. By then, dozens of studies from around the world already suggested that clean needle programs not only reduce HIV, but attract addicts into recovery. Ramstad also, again against the evidence, opposes medical marijuana and supports federal policing and prosecution of providers and patients in the states that have made it legal. These states have not seen the rise in teen drug use that opponents like the congressman predicted. There's simply no evidence that allowing sick people to get needed medication conflicts with helping addicts. Obama has said he does not support these prosecutions. Will Ramstad push him in the wrong direction here, too? In an economic crisis, do we really want to spend federal time and money locking up medical marijuana providers and sick people? While Ramstad has opposed some interdiction efforts and called for more treatment funding, someone who doesn't even believe that addicts have a right to life if they aren't in treatment is not the kind of recovering person that I want representing me as drug czar. That's not change, President Obama. That's more of the same. Don't make the mistake that Bill Clinton did and install a drug czar who will ignore science and push dogma. Amsterdam closing about 1 in 5 cannabis cafes. From the Telegraph, UK. Amsterdam Council plans to shut 43 out of the capital's 228 popular marijuana-selling coffee shops in support of a Dutch government bid to protect schoolchildren from drugs. The city's Labour Lord Mayor Job Cohen said the businesses due to close were all within an unacceptable 200 metres of schools. Peter Veeling, a spokesman for the cannabis union in the Netherlands, said that closures were unnecessary as coffee shop owners carefully monitored customers' ages, banning school children. Said Veeling, quote, "They know a school-aged customer found on the premises would mean instant closure of the coffee shop," end quote. One of the cafes due to close is the Bulldog, a popular tourist attraction that is housed in a former police headquarters that is considered too close to a high school called the Barleus Gymnasium. Margaret Bozeman, the school principal, is opposed to the ban because coffee shops are not allowed to sell cannabis to under 18-year-olds. She told Radio Netherlands, quote, "We don't think it's very useful. We actually think it's just for show. Children will get their drugs if they want to anyway, and closing the shops, which are quite regulated, like the Bulldog, is not a very good solution to this problem," end quote. Dutch school children already have far less access to and use of both cannabis and drugs, precisely because you have a system of tolerated sales of small amounts of cannabis and psychedelic mushrooms. Now you're banning mushrooms as of December 1st, and closing a fifth of your cannabis cafes because they're too close to a school? Have you seen the results we've gotten with laws like that? Why would you want to emulate our prohibitionist policies in any way? Arkansas voters support cannabis decriminalization. From the Drug Policy Education Group. Zogby International was commissioned by the Drug Policy Education Group to conduct an online survey of 436 voters in Arkansas. Panel participants were asked, quote, "In 2007, over 7,400 adults were arrested in Arkansas for misdemeanor possession of 1 ounce or less of marijuana, over half the state's total drug arrests. According to a national 2005 study, state and local governments spend an average of $10,400 per arrest on police, courts, and jails. Based on that estimate, 2007 marijuana arrests will cost Arkansas taxpayers nearly $77 million. Knowing this information, would you strongly support, somewhat oppose, or strongly oppose a law that would eliminate the penalties for adult marijuana possession of 1 ounce or less? End quote. More than half, 53% of Arkansas voters support a law that would eliminate the penalties for adult marijuana possession of 1 ounce or less, including 1 in 3, or 35%, who strongly support such a law. 45% are opposed to such a law, including 38% who are strongly opposed. 3% are not sure where they stand. Fayetteville and Eureka Springs, Arkansas, have already passed lowest law enforcement priority initiatives. I wouldn't be surprised to see a medical marijuana initiative coming up soon, or perhaps decriminalization. If we can pass a pro-cannabis ballot measure in a Bible Belt southern state to go with Michigan in the Midwest, the Northeast, and the West, politicians are going to have to adjust their thinking on the cannabis issue.
Hello, Chicago!
Barack Obama has been elected the 44th President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in?
It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15th, 2009. Check norml.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news. We've made it to another weekend, dear Stashers, and joining us every Friday is CelebStoner.com Steve Bloom. Steve, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing really good. You know, I'm unpacking a lot of the audio and video from the Normal conference that we were both at back in Berkeley, and just getting around to the pot culture panels and all of that. And one of the things that I thought was, you know, really notable this year is just how much cannabis culture has seeped into the mainstream filmmaking. You know, we've seen so many movies that have come out this year, and you and I have talked about a lot of them. What I thought was cool, I got onto your site today and noticed that you had an exclusive interview with this director of a brand new documentary called High, and it's out on DVD this weekend, so I thought maybe you could tell our listeners a bit about that.
Yeah, it's called High, The True Tale of American Marijuana. It's directed by John Hollowatch, who's a first-time director, and it's a release on Terra Entertainment. That's a small independent film company. And, you know, John's pushing it, you know, on his, you know, site, and it's kind of, you know, all over the web right now as it came out this week, but it's not coming out into theatrical. It's only a DVD release. And, you know, this sort of makes sense because it's a documentary, and although a lot of documentaries get theatrical releases, a lot of them don't, and perhaps this one is, you know, borderline qualified for that, but, it's a very, you know, strong, piece. It's similar to what we've seen before, in other documentaries on the marijuana subject and on the subject of the war on drugs. It's reminiscent of Grass in the first portion of the movie where he does a history of marijuana prohibition. And as Grass, you know, spent quite a bit of time on telling that story, this is kind of similar territory. And the second part of the movie veers off into kind of heavier territory, areas on sections on addiction treatment, and particularly a focus on patients who suffer from pain and cannot get their medicine because the DA has been cracking down on doctors writing scripts for pain patients. I wasn't really familiar with this problem, but there's a focus on one particular doctor, you know, who's been targeted by the DEA, and then interview with the variety of patients who are going without their medicine. It doesn't really steer in the direction of marijuana when it comes to the pain patients. I mean, I'm sure the patients are taking opiates, but they cannot get their medicine, and I'm sure some of them use marijuana as well. But as John told me in the interview that that I did with him, he wanted to use you know, marijuana as a springboard into a discussion about the war on drugs. It kind of, the war on drugs really starts with, and the backbone of the war on drugs is marijuana prohibition. And so you'll find that that's the main focus of the movie about halfway through, and then it kind of goes off into another direction. It's a little bit surprising because, you know, the movie is titled Marijuana, you know, it's titled The True Tale of American Marijuana, and yet, you know, it seems like it veers off. Now, I asked John a little bit about that to sort of understand, you know, why the movie veered off, and he said, I wanted people to realize that marijuana is the backbone of the war on drugs. It could hurt all these other people. You can't give a pass to marijuana and forget about the war on drugs, which affects so many people besides marijuana users. So the story of Dr. Paul Heberle and his pain patients is horrible, reeking of government corruption and headline whoring prosecution, and just the tip of the iceberg. The one thing I've realized above all while working on this is that people are, for the most part, ignorant of the issue, not their fault. They have jobs, families, and lives to lead, and they can't be afforded the time to get angry, but they should, because this so-called war could be knocking down their door someday. It's all a matter of degrees, but in the war on drugs, what looks like a single brick is really a wall, and except can't see it until you're plowing into it, which is a pretty profound comment. And the movie, you know, pretty much follows suit. There's also a segment in there that's really disturbing. It's some footage from the 90s of American prisoners being searched, and it's just, I mean, now you watch that footage and surprised I had never seen it before, because I guess the footage has been around, but it really reminds you of, like, where Abu Ghraib really came from, that, you know, these prison guards and police and, you know, different, you know, enforcement, you know, organizations here in the U.S. have been, you know, abusing prisoners and torturing for years, and they pretty much took what they did, you know, here and brought it over to, you know, Iraq. And so in this particular case, what you see is prisoners crawling on their stomachs naked, forced to crawl around, you know, all in, you know, spreading their butts. I mean, it's really disgusting. It's a disgusting segment. I mean, you just almost look away. And so I asked John again, you know, how did that figure into the story of American marijuana? He says marijuana is what runs the war on drugs, taking half the money from the government anti-drug budgets to battle it. And it was the plant that started the whole thing off. Furthermore, it's a reflection of the kind of system we currently have. The videotape was meant to show police how to search people, whether in prison or otherwise, who they suspected of possessing drugs, that such abuse is even conceivable, a conceivable way to behave as officers is ludicrous, let alone that it would be acceptable to treat human beings that way. It's really disturbing. So, you know, that's again where the movie kind of like goes off in this other direction. You know, there's a lot of footage from Reefer Madness, there's interviews with Keith Strop from Normal, and some other, you know, Dr. Lyle Craker, Ricardo Cortez, who wrote It's a Plant, it's just a plant. So, you know, it covers a lot of interesting territory, but I do have to say that it's a little bit schizophrenic in that it kind of has different purposes, although John explains why he covers all this territory, but in watching it, it's a little unsettling.
Hmm. Well, it's out on DVD, and we can get a copy of that probably through all the regular outlets, online as well as a regular store.
Amazon and all the other places. And, you know, if you go to Slepstoner, we'll give you the links.
Yeah, there's a big banner, a big old box ad on the side there for it. You can pick it up through that. I always think it's worthwhile picking up these DVDs. I use them at the various festivals that we go to in the summertime, and I show them in the booths and help people try to learn more about the issue. And I think these movies are a good way to get that, get the issue out there for people that, you know, they may not be so interested in cracking a book or scanning all the websites that you and I scan. So, you know,
well,
the
John's
more.
Also, John's also taking a little bit of a different approach here. He's not aligning himself with any of the marijuana reform organizations. He wants to sort of feel, you know, that he's objective and he's not on really anybody's side, though it's pretty clear that he's opposed to the war on drugs and offended by and appalled by it. But he hasn't really reached out to the, you know, to the DPA, Normal, MPP, or whoever he might want to reach out to and say, hey, you know, can we do some screenings with your organization? So he's kind of doing it on his own.
Well, that's great. Let's just see how that turns out, and I'll be getting my copy here just as soon as possible. Now, another thing I wanted to talk to you about, Steve, is, you know, I know that you were behind the Stoners for Obama movement, and we've seen Barack Obama and his transition team name a few people to some, potentially name some people to some positions, Jim Ramstad potentially for Drug Czar, Eric Holder as Attorney General. What are your thoughts on those nominations?
Well, you know, concerned. I mean, like everybody in the marijuana reform movement, you know, we're concerned about Obama's selections, and the selections don't look particularly great right now. Eric Holder, you know, had kind of a reputation when he was the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia being a hardliner. He was responsible for making sales of marijuana a felony, which at the time when he was there had not been, and he pushed really hard. He felt that there was too much leniency around marijuana arrests or lack thereof, especially of people selling. So it gives him still a little bit of a black eye, you know, in our community. And there's, you know, some concerns as well about Jim Ramstad, who's the apparent candidate for the drug czar, who's a Republican congressman from Minnesota, who's on the board of CASA, which is an anti-drug organization. So, you know, I mean, you know, our, you know, wish, you know, would be, you know, for a much more liberal selection. I'm not really sure. I'm going to sort of hold back a little bit before we get too excited. There are concerns. I mean, already on my website, you know, we've gotten a comment, you know, somebody criticizing the site for promoting, you know, Obama, and it says, I emailed you guys months ago saying that Obama was not the Stoner's choice and that someone like Ron Paul was, but you had to have all these banners promising that Obama was the Stoner's, was for Stoners. Bull. Well, you know, we'll see. You know, I mean, I don't expect him to, you know, a lot of us would wish that someone like Ethel Nadelman would become the drug czar, but, you know, that's in our dreams, you know, not in Obama's, you know. Plus, he's going with people he knows. And he's also trying to be bipartisan, so it's a good place to be bipartisan when you pick the drug czar. Might as well pick somebody from the other side, because they've been running the show for so long anyway. But, it, like you have been writing on your website, you know, the Stash site, you know, where's the change that we voted for? You know, this is just more of the same. This is status quo. You know, I think the real test is going to be what happens when Obama gets into office and they crack down on, you know, another dispensary in California. What's he going to do and what's he going to say? Or is he going to put a leash on the DEA, or is it just going to continue? It's going to be the same as it ever was. And if that's the case, then we're going to be very disappointed in Obama. But honestly, I think we have to give him a little time, even though it doesn't look great. These selections don't look great. Neither did the Biden selection look great as far as, you know, bringing people aboard, you know, who are sympathetic to our issue, the marijuana and, you know, drug war issues. But, you know, clearly it's not, you know, Obama's priority right now to make us happy.
Yeah. You know what? I'm kind of on board with you there, too, as far as trying to see. Let's just see what happens. The nominations at this point don't look good based on the past. But then again, what would be a bigger signification of change than to take these guys who used to be drug warriors and then from the top down implement a policy that's a little more rational and scientific and see those guys actually have to change because of the pressure from the top? I guess that's what I'm hoping for.
I think there's a bit of a problem with black officials dealing with the drug war. They tend to be a little more hardline because it's drugs have ravaged, you know, inner city communities, and they tend to blame all drugs on this, not just, you know, the hard drugs, which are really are the cause of the problem. But they kind of buy into gateway theory, you know, crack to marijuana to crack, marijuana to heroin, whatever it is, you know, look at, you know, the way our society, you know, deals with drugs. It's available, you know, through, you know, you could get your drugs from a dealer and get whatever you want, as opposed to the Dutch policy, which is separating soft and hard drugs. So, you know, as long as, you know, everything's underground, you know, there is going to be the opportunity for people to skip from one drug to the other, because it's just available that way, and, you know, people might want to try something else out. But I just think that, you know, so someone like Holder, you know, is going to take a hard line, because, you know, there he was in D.C., heavy drug problems in D.C., so they want to take the hard line and try and clean up the neighborhoods, and they don't separate and say, okay, well, marijuana is not the problem, crack, heroin, and meth are the problems, and that's what they should do, and isolate the problems and not just, you know, mix marijuana in with everything else. And hopefully, you know, we'll get this point of view that'll kind of start becoming clearer, that'll come through the Obama administration, that they do recognize this and marijuana is not the problem. They'll sort of work towards slowly but surely decriminalizing marijuana and allowing medical use, you know, as far as it can go from state to state. So, you know, I am a little disappointed so far, but we'll see. I can't really, you know, we have to wait. I mean, it's too soon to really get too worried.
Yeah, I keep trying to tell people, remember, it's not 1996, okay? There was a big election, there was a mandate for change, and we saw the marijuana ballot initiatives pass 9 out of 10, and the ones that passed in Michigan and Massachusetts got more votes than Obama did, so they better start paying attention.
Right.
Well, Steve, thanks for joining us again here on The Stash for our Friday, and this is our last interview for Thanksgiving, so have yourself a great holiday.
Hey, you too. And by the way, you know, I don't know if you saw the disgusting video of Sarah Palin interviewed in front of the the turkeys. You know, I'm not a turkey eater, so I kind of would kind of advise a lot of people out there maybe to go vegetarian this week.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Hey, everybody, we're just going to make this a quick one, Stashers. It's Friday, the work week is over, and I think we all just have to go out and have the best weekend we can. You've heard Los Lonely Boys on the podcast before, from the same album, no less. But this track is quite apropos, a rockin' blues track for what I can only hope will be a rockin' weekend for us all. You can hear more Los Lonely Boys on their MySpace page or through their website, which you can find the links to at our blog, stash.normal.org. This song is Friday Night, performed live by Los Lonely Boys.
Friday night, I'm gonna have some fun tonight.
my suit, suit, stay Seattle's too. Well, I drove on my suit, suit, stay Seattle's too. I've been swinging my silver chain, looking oh so cool. Well, it's Friday night, I'm gonna have some fun tonight. I'm gonna do everything, gonna make it out of sight. Well, I throw on my suit, suit, stay Seattle's too. Y'all hear me? Well, I throw on my suit, suit, stay Seattle's too. I'll be wearing my silver chain, looking oh so cool. One more time.
Much.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
We talk a lot about the war on drugs here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, and joining us to talk a little bit more about that is screenwriter and activist Mike Gray from California. And Mike, welcome back to the show.
Good, Russ.
Last time we had spoken with you, we were talking about the DVD you helped to produce, the Clergy Speak Out on the War on Drugs. How has that gone? How's that movie been received?
Very well. In fact, we're at work on a Spanish translation of the video right now, and one of the participants in the original DVD, actually two, Sister Marino from the Episcopal Church in San Diego, is fluent in Spanish. And, of course, Reverend Ramirez in the Bronx is Hispanic And so between the two of them, they're going to, I think, do a very fine job of translating the English into Spanish subtitles.
I think that's a really good idea to get that translated to Spanish. We know a lot of the people in the Hispanic community get a lot of their feelings on these issues from their church, from their clergy.
Yep.
Yeah, so if we get that that into their in their way of thinking there, and maybe turn a few heads here and get them on our side of the issue, that would be very nice.
Absolutely.
Now speaking of Hispanic people and what's going on with the war on drugs, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today was a piece I had seen you put out in I believe the San Diego paper about. We talk about the war on drugs here in America, but just south of us in Mexico, they're literally having a shooting war on drugs. And I really thought that our listeners should hear a little bit more about this from someone who knows a lot about it.
Well, yeah, I live in Los Angeles, and the L.A. Times is just every day. There's another big article today, a picture, I think, on the front page of the L.A. Times of a federal police vehicle in Sinaloa. And it's just riddled with bullets. Mm. I mean, the driver's side window looks like it has maybe, you know, like 30 bullet holes in it, just in that one window. And there are bullets all over. Apparently there were some federal police officers in the bed of the pickup truck, and they got killed. Everybody wiped out. You know, three gunmen hit them at an intersection in the downtown Sinaloa, Main Street. I mean, even back in the days of Al Capone, they didn't pull that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
the problem is that the situation in Mexico is such an acid bath of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And what sparked my op-ed, the editorial that I wrote for the San Diego Union Tribune, was the discovery 2 weeks ago that a couple of the top prosecutors in the Attorney General's office in Mexico City had been actually working for the Sinaloa cartel. They were on the payroll to the tune of, get this, $150,000 a month. That was just the low-level guys.
Yeah.
The high-level guys were getting $500,000 a month. You know, I mean, when, as I said in the op-ed, if you're a police officer, you're getting paid less than $200 a week for the average Mexican police officer. And here comes somebody who says, listen, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $150,000 a month. All you have to do is just close your eyes and take the money and don't say anything. That's an unbeatable argument.
Yeah. You
know? I know of damned few gringos who would be able to turn that down, especially if the alternative is we're going to shoot you.
Exactly. Now, of course, this corruption is born of the prohibition and giving over this entire lucrative market to these criminal cartels down there. What are the latest strategies that are being employed to try to stop this, and what are the chances it's going to have any effect?
Well, Calderon, the new president, 24 months ago, when he came into office, was determined to shut down the drug lords. He was going to go after them hammer and tong. And he mobilized 24,000 federal troops to go out and take over these local police departments that had just become so totally corrupt, you know, that they were working, in many cases, working directly for the drug cartels. So he sends in the army. Well, there is no percentage in that. I mean, you get nothing out of it. Replacing poorly paid police officers with poorly paid military personnel, you just simply, all you're doing is exposing the military personnel to the joys of high living. And as I said in the op-ed, President Calderon must have realized what a dangerous course of action it was to get the army directly involved in trying to enforce the civil laws about drugs, because the corruption just spreads through the army. That's the last thing you need. And in my book Drug Crazy, I go through at one point in detail the story of General Gutierrez Rebolo, who, this is back during the days of the Clinton administration when General Barry McCaffrey was our drug czar.
Mm-hmm.
And the then president of Mexico appointed this General Rebolo, Gutierrez Rebolo, to as the chief drug fighter, the head drug czar in Mexico, and General McCaffrey was so thrilled to have a fellow general in in the drug fight with him in Mexico, and he said, in fact, this is a quote: "This is a man I've met. This man, he's a man of impeccable integrity." And 11 weeks after he was appointed, Gutierrez Rebolo wound up in a federal prison because it turns out he'd been very tough on the drug cartels, but somewhat selectively. There was one cartel he never touched. The Gulf cartel, it turns out, was funding his little love nest in Mexico City, a very lavish apartment, and it was being paid for by the Gulf cartel. And so this is what you're looking at, a situation where the drug dealers have such an overwhelming amount of cash available. And I don't think people really understand the actual dimensions of this problem. Some estimates put, the estimate I quoted in the op-ed was $250 billion a year, but other people say it's as much as $350 billion a year in the illegal drug market on any given year. And with that kind of money, it's tax-free. It's irresistible.
Yeah.
If the drug dealers need to buy whoever they need to buy, the head of the police department, the head of the state police, the head of the state, they got the cash. They can do it.
Mm.
And, if we don't get a handle on this, we are looking at the destruction of civilization.
Yeah, we definitely can't have a failed state to the south of us, on the same continent. That's not going to help either of us. And also, one of the things I saw that Calderon was proposing was this decriminalization for small amounts. Is this just throwing up their hands, we've got far bigger fish to fry than the small-time addict?
Well, I think that that's a practical solution, but it's also a hint of a crack in the dike, because they have come to realize that the enforcement situation is just simply out of reach.
Mm.
They can't they can't even send police out into the streets safely.
Yeah.
How are they going to, busting individual drug users seems to me to be a truly pointless waste of time, and I think the Mexicans have come to that conclusion on their own. They basically are saying, we've got to legalize small amounts. And
yeah,
the U.S. government, as I understand it, gave them basically a thumbs up on that approach. They realize that the Mexicans are, that the danger is that they are going to be a failed state, as you suggest. And the idea that this is going to be confined to south of the Rio Grande is cuckoo. I mean, we know we have corrupt police departments right here in the United States, and I think Drug Sense publishes a monthly report on police corruption, and it's full of articles all over the United States of police that have been, well, that's the ones we know about. Those are the ones we caught. The really big guys you don't catch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't leave fingerprints in public. And some of those people, I'll put it this way. Joe Kennedy, famous multimillionaire, father of a president, made his personal fortune from booze when it was illegal. He wasn't a bootlegger himself. He facilitated bootleggers. He managed to import, you could say, quote, import Canadian whiskey into the United States during alcohol prohibition. He made a fortune and sent his sons to Harvard, and one of them became president.
Hmm.
So we got a situation that is sort of like that, except with a lot more guns, a lot more violence, a lot dirtier players, and the acid bath of corruption. Hmm. It's eating us alive.
Yeah. Now, with the situation as it is it really, it can't really be as simple as ending prohibition and regulating these markets and bringing this $250 to $350 billion into our economy. Is that the direction to go? Can it really be that simple? Or would we face problems of what are all those people involved in the drug trade going to do for work after there's no more drug trade? I'm looking for a way out of it, and I'm wondering what you might think.
Well, it is that simple, Russ. You just simply a simple majority vote in the U.S. Congress saying, we've changed our minds. This is a nice idea, but it didn't work. And basically, we've got to end drug prohibition and turn this problem back over to the medical profession, which is where it was before 1914, when we began this insane idea of prohibition of drugs. We did not have a drug problem in the United States prior to that time. And anyone who wishes to quarrel with that argument, let me make a suggestion for a very simple test that you can perform in your local public library. If you go to the public library, there are these big books full of the index of the New York Times, our newspaper of record, okay? And you go back to 1913, you will not find any articles at all about a narcotics problem or a scourge of narcotics or narcotics addiction or anything like that. The New York Times, I think, you know, maybe one or two articles a year on the subject of narcotics at all. All of a sudden, we made them illegal, and now they're front page. At the time that we began this nightmare, you have to remember that we had only, at the best estimates, were between 200,000 and 300,000 addicts in the entire United States. At that time, we had a population of 90 million. So we're talking about a teeny tiny percentage of the population. Now we've spent $1 trillion after 90 years trying to enforce this hopeless drug war. And what have we done? We have managed to increase the rate of addiction by 500%. So there are five times as many narcotics addicts per capita. Actually, many times more than that because the population has increased. But I mean, just per capita, 90 million in 1920 versus 280 million or whatever it is now. But the addiction among that population has increased 500%. So it was not only poorly planned, poorly conceived, and poorly executed, it was a disaster.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one comes from John McCart, who's a Canadian justice, who wrote, quote, "Cannabis is not an addictive substance, does not cause a motivational syndrome, and health-related costs of cannabis use are negligible when compared to the costs attributable to tobacco and alcohol consumption." End quote. He's absolutely right. Nobody here is saying that cannabis use is harmless to self or society. We're saying compared to what's legal, it's far less harmful than those two things. It's time to end adult marijuana prohibition and take what little harm there is in cannabis, the criminality of it, out of the equation. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. Except for Thanksgiving, we're going to be taking the Thanksgiving weekend off, but we hope you'll be visiting your family and friends as well. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.